Tereo Ererangi o Te Mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Emergence News. Kia ora, my name is Nigel. And if you're joining us for the first time on this program, you are likely noticing, as we do, a world in chaos. On this program, we endeavour to provide some ideas and perspective on why. Why is humanity suffering? There's uncertainty everywhere with political, economic, and social issues demanding attention and remedy in almost every area of human existence. So stay with us for the next 20 to 25 minutes as we hopefully can provide a big picture perspective and offer a message of hope in doing so. In the studio with me this morning are John and Peter. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Nigel.
Have you noticed how some of the issues and developments that we discussed when we first started this program, you know, 10, 11, 12 years ago, have you noticed how some of the issues, they're in the news daily now, whereas back then it all seemed a bit radical?
Yes, we were almost predicting, weren't we?
Yes. For example, climate change. Do you remember Greta Thunberg? Her concerns now don't quite seem so radical anymore, do they?
No, well, this is true. The a lot of the things that she said would be ending by now haven't ended. The time is what a lot of predictions get wrong, isn't it?
I read a critique of Greta Thunberg. My name's John. Nigel did not introduce me, but I've been here for some time sitting in the corner with a microphone listening to you two clowns. Anyway.
John's back. He's back from his sabbatical.
Saw a nice little critique of Greta Thunberg, and basically the author was saying she has pivoted from climate change to politics and a critique of capitalism because she's figured out that climate change is the result of the political economic model that we practice on this planet. And I found that quite interesting.
She's a smart young lady.
She's a smart young lady. And for two reasons, being young and female, she scares an awful lot of grumpy old men.
Her Asperger's condition, John, impacts her outlook on the world. Now, these are her words.
Right.
Not a journalist, not mine. She says there are no grey areas when it comes to survival. Either we go on as a civilization or we don't. We have to change. And regarding her condition, she says, given the right circumstances, being different is a superpower.
I read an article where she described her neurodiversity as a superpower because she has hyperfocus and she can remain on topic. I'm struggling to. What did I leave the house to do today? So
we all struggle from that.
she credits her neurodiversity with providing her with some skills that make her fit for the role. And I think that's a really interesting observation because Maitreya has said those with the skills and the qualities and the abilities needed for the time
will incarnate
for the time, during the time. And he's also said that it will be the young people that make the change.
And she's quite a glowing example of that.
And she's both.
Yes.
She's come equipped and she's a young person who's challenging authority.
And she's a good demonstration of detachment. If you think about all those powerful politicians that have gone after her with hate speech, it seems to just float over past her, doesn't it?
The thing that I find impressive about Greta is she practices harmlessness. This stuff doesn't bother her. Getting slated in social media, global media, by old men doesn't bother her. Because her focus is single-minded and she's an evidence-based individual. Mm. She once said, I'm not a scientist, I just read the science. Mm. Do you know what I mean? She's not claiming to invent, she's claiming to read and understand.
Yes.
And that's why she says it's critical, existential, that we deal with it now, climate change.
And she walks the talk.
Oh.
If you think about her participation in that flotilla last year, she's fearless. She's willing to suffer for the cause. You know, there's no hesitation.
Yes.
You know, that's very admirable.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a fan.
Yeah. No, you're a fanboy.
Yes.
And you're also a fanboy of Benjamin Krem, and we'll talk about him later.
Okay.
Another subject that we talked about 10 years ago, Peter, which doesn't seem so radical anymore, is alternative health and medicine.
Yes.
You know, if you think about health practices such as fasting, diet and nutrition, music therapy, massage therapy, Tai Chi, those oriental healing practices like Reiki, they don't seem so weird or different. You know, I drive around Christchurch and I see signs and billboards and advertising all these services, acupuncture.
I think nutritional choice has become mainstream, so vegetarian, pescatarian, veganism. I see there's still a little bit of really unnecessary criticism of veganism on social media. But I think you're right, Nigel. Meditation, you know, is so mainstream. Yoga, I think we need to thank yoga teachers for bringing weird stuff into the mainstream, because 25, 30 years ago in New Zealand, yoga was not that mainstream. And then professional sports teams started doing yoga to keep their movement in limbo and as a rehab process post-injury. And now there's a yoga teacher, yoga studio.
Everywhere.
In every town.
Pilates.
I mean, we do two things in New Zealand, coffee and yoga. You know, most of your cafes have got a yoga studio above them.
Well, I can tell you one of the first yogis to take and present yoga to the West was Yogananda.
Yes.
Paramahamsa Yogananda back in the 1920s. Mm. Went to America. He was one of the first teachers of yoga to the West. So we've got a lot to thank him for. Many things to thank him for.
Many.
And just speaking of those oriental healing practices, Peter, the use of magnets.
Oh, yes.
Do you know anything about that?
I have come across it because
it's supposed to be great for arthritis, for example.
Peter,
yes,
is a magnet.
And particularly broken bones and that sort of thing. Mm. You know, you can put a magnet on there to help stimulate the healing. And, you know, when my son broke his leg, well, he had a motorbike accident, you know.
So he didn't break it, the road did.
Well, yes, middle of the night, heading back to Christchurch, car coming the other way, passing another car.
You know. Wasn't his fault.
Both doing at least 100K.
So the collision was 200K.
Collision, thrown off the bike. Bike ended up like a square lump of metal. And just luckily he wasn't under the car at that point. He was thrown off. His helmet got pretty well crashed, but he didn't do any damage to the brain. And smashed the leg, smashed the wrist, and got off very lightly.
And the magnets helped.
And the magnets have helped,
aid healing, apparently.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, these ancient Chinese therapies, you know, have you heard of the cupping therapy?
Yes. I've had cupping done.
Yes, I've had that.
Yeah, really.
Have you? So it uses suction to increase the blood flow, doesn't it?
Yes, that's right, it does. Yeah.
And if you watch...
And it works.
If you watch professional sport, league, gridiron or rugby, when they get their tops off, and I need to be careful how I say this, when they get their tops off, you'll often notice they've got round bruising on their shoulders.
Oh, it's the cupping.
It's the cupping. So at that professional sport level, they are using, and this is the impact of, which is how we started, this is the impact of non-Western, non-mainstream health modalities coming into Western culture, which Western culture was pretty slim on innovative ideas, really, when it came to health. If it didn't come from a pharmaceutical company, we weren't that interested. Mm. But now there's all sorts of mainstream stuff. And I find it particularly interesting when professional sports teams are picking up what would be considered alternative practices because they want what works and they want it quickly.
Mm.
So, and they know they've got limitations about pharmaceutical approach to injury treatment for their athletes because they've got limits around blood testing.
I'd really be interested to know what the current All Blacks diet regime is compared to, say, Colin Mead's back in the 1960s and 1970s. Yeah. You know, the steak and veggies back then and what our All Blacks are now eating, their regime for health and fitness.
Yep.
It's a different ball game, pardon the pun. Yep.
That's right. Yep. The old ball game was probably a steak pie at morning tea time.
Right, and a beer. Yeah, steak pie and a beer.
Yeah, and plenty of that.
Yeah.
Homeopathy, there's another great example.
One of my favourites. I love homeopathy. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Native plant remedies. You know a bit about that. You were talking off air about that, weren't, with blueberries, weren't you?
Yes. Yes, that's right. I mean,
blueberries are supposed to be a super food.
Yeah.
Yes, yep. Particularly for the brain. And they were just saying that the leaves of the rosemary were particularly good, and you only need, a cupful of blueberries and a teaspoonful of the rosemary leaves and perhaps a bit of a fat like, coconut oil, because obviously so often we see that a fat is required to mobilise the other ingredients.
Yeah.
And the coconut oil is probably one of the best.
So you mix them together and that...
Well, just whiz them up I think you soak the rosemary leaves a bit to soften them up.
And you just blend them, do you?
Blend them up.
Mm. Yeah. And dietary supplements, you know, that's a whole industry now, isn't it? There are actually shops that just specialise in dietary supplements.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm a bit of a fan of dietary supplements and I get kind of sucked into it. But what I'm finding interesting is the amount of research now around exercise, the benefits of exercise, and what exercise to be doing, and also supplements. I think an awful lot of researchers are discovering that the level of pollution, the level of stripping of natural goodness out of our food chain has left us wanting in a number of areas, and the supplement industry is trying to
make up for that.
But my concern is that it's also a multi-billion-dollar industry planet-wide.
Oh, that's right.
And my concern is whenever capitalism gets its nasty little nose into things, they start inventing reasons to take their product. So I'm sort of betwixt and between, but there is some interesting research coming through now about what's good for the brain, Peter, what's good for the body, and some of the supplementation that's available.
Yes, well, I just see that, Watties is now going to be history in New Zealand, and we're going to be importing our food.
Yeah.
And we're the world's food basket.
No, it's a commercial we're not decision. Saying
it's absolutely stupid, but we're waiting for another name for it.
Yeah, yeah. I know, it's just, isn't it incredible?
Yeah.
We produce enough food to feed how many people, John?
40.
Brian Bruce did research some years ago.
Journalist,
and he said we produce in New Zealand 40 times more food than we consume.
Mm.
But our grocery prices in this country are outrageous.
Yeah, they're dearer than what they're selling them overseas. Yeah.
Well, because
you can buy butter in the UK at a cheaper price than you can
in a
local supermarket.
Yeah. This is unfair, and it's
well, we're getting gouged. It's profiteering. Mm. That's all it is. We produce enough food in this country to keep the prices down.
Yeah. 2 years ago, John.
Yes.
Almost 2 years ago.
Yes.
You were interviewed on a German podcast show.
Yes.
Called Mystic Takeaway.
Yes.
By Eliza Gruff.
Yes.
And she's a Share International co-worker based in Germany, but she does a bit of work in America as well.
Yeah.
She said the most important component of the Maitreya story for her is we are not alone.
Mm.
And I pondered on that and I thought, yeah, she's right. You know, before I came across the Maitreya story, I felt very alone in the world. Yeah. And then when I heard that the Masters of Wisdom are working behind the scenes on our behalf, civilization after civilization.
Mm. We are not alone.
We are not alone. I found that very reassuring.
Yes, and also the thing that is interesting about the Maitreya story is not only are we part of a process, what we're seeing on planet Earth is part of a process, part of a plan. We are not alone, and those that are guiding us have a plan. And so none of this stumbling around in the woods, although it appears to us like we're stumbling around in the woods, is actually part of the process. And what's Maitreya's quote that I can never quite remember, that the new wine requires new bottles, and
the old bottles
need to be broken. Mm. And so to create a new society, you've got to dismantle the old one.
And to do that, it's going to be, in the short term, uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's right. You just need an agent for chaos like Trump to stimulate the whole thing.
In that breaking down, Peter, in that chaos, in that breaking down, you're getting to see what we have.
Yes, that's
right. And what our society is a failure on many, many levels, except for a very small minority of people who we now have identified quite clearly and honestly as oligarchs, billionaires. There's a small group of people on this planet, primarily men, who are pulling the levers of civilization and life. And in that breaking down that Trump has exposed, he's exposed the corruption that's normal. Mm. He's exposed that the systems are so broken that they are easily manipulated by those
people. And he's done it quite brazenly.
Because he's got no subtleness, because his skill is arrogance.
Yeah.
And arrogance in the current social structure will take you a long way. You don't have to be smart to be arrogant.
No.
You don't have to be intelligent to be arrogant.
No.
You know, Einstein was not arrogant.
No.
Right? Neither was Tesla. Right? Mm. Genius men, but not arrogant.
Mm. Yeah.
So what does that tell me?
The dummies are arrogant. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In that interview
back to Eliza.
Yeah, back to Mystic Takeaway. It was a fascinating interview, and if you're interested in this interview, you can find Mystic Takeaway online, or you can visit our website. We've just posted it on Substack. You said to Eliza John...
Oh, God, when people look at me and say, "You said," I know I'm in trouble.
Yeah. You did.
That just flicks me back to my childhood. Yeah, anyway, go ahead, Nigel.
Stop regressing. Just concentrate in the now, John.
Be present.
Stay present.
Yeah,
take a deep breath. You have incarnated at this time for a reason, you said to her. Find it.
Oh, yes.
Would you like to elaborate on that?
Well, it goes back to my earlier statement around Greta Thunberg, that Maitreya and Krem have both clearly said to me personally, even though they didn't say it to me personally, but I took it personally, that you're here for a reason.
That's right.
You're here now for a reason. Yeah. And that applies to the whole 8 billion of us.
We're all here for a reason right now. We're privileged to be here, even though it feels really uncomfortable.
So although I took that personally and meant, I'm meant to be here, it's a message for all of us.
Mm.
And the other thing that goes with that, and I think I mentioned it in that interview, was Benjamin Krem said a couple of things in books that really struck me. And one of them was how important meditation is for your personal growth, development, spiritual enlightenment. And he said your soul will bring you into contact with meditation life after life after life until you pick it up and take it seriously as a practice. And I suddenly went, my soul wants to contact me.
Yeah.
That's why I'm doing meditation. And that gave me a powerful sense of worth.
What a realization.
To know that my soul wants to speak to me.
And then she asked you a very interesting question about meditation. She asked you, what is the difference, what's the comparison between transcendental meditation, which is a personal meditation.
Which I do,
And transmission meditation.
Yep. And I said that TM or transcendental meditation is about letting go, is about being able to sit quietly in your mind, watch your mental activity and pay it no attention, right? So you're sitting in a control room of your mind, of your body, but not touching any of the buttons.
Detached from it.
Just sitting there quietly, right. Mm. Whereas transmission, you're reaching for certain buttons. Mm. You know, you're in the control room and you're reaching. So transmission is about pushing energy. Well, not about pushing, but allowing energy to run through you by holding a state, your attention on the Ajna Centre, whereas TM is about letting it all go.
And to give you an analogy, I love this. That's why I listened back to this interview, because there was some really good stuff in there. And it included you, John.
Oh,
there you go. Mm. TM, you described it as a cardiovascular exercise.
Yep.
And transmission is like lifting weights in the gym.
Yep.
Because if you think about transmission, it is hard work.
Yep.
It's very simple to apply it,
yep.
but to stick with it and concentrate. And my personal meditation is Kriya Yoga. And I'm finding it's excellent for developing my ability to concentrate
Stay
for longer
task.
Periods of time.
Yep.
That's what transmission meditation is all about. So my personal meditation and my service meditation are very complementary. They're assisting both practices.
Yep. The analogy, I'd like to expand on the analogy, because if you do cardiovascular exercise, whether it's on a treadmill, a bike, or running, you can kind of let your mind go, right? You can just run for mile after mile and your mind is just bubbling, just cruising, just running the body. Whereas when you go to a gym and lift weight, you have to do it with focus and intent and intention. And a lot of researchers around exercise talk about that mind-body connection, that if you put your attention on the body part that you're working, you will have a greater benefit. So that's why they're different. One is about just letting go and sitting there comfortably and cruising. And the other one is about that focus and about holding and about paying attention. When you're doing transmission, you have to pay attention.
Yes.
The mind will wander.
Yeah.
And you use the om to bring it back to the Ajna Centre.
And, of course, one thing that I really love about transmission meditation is that when you make contact with soul energy through meditation, if you don't use that energy that you accrue positively through service, you're going to have physical difficulties, aren't you, Peter?
That's right.
Neurosis of the initiate. So you're bringing in soul energy. You're charging up your gear, your equipment, but doing nothing with it.
Yes, you've got to do something with it.
Yeah, So it's like sitting with your hot car in the garage, revving it. That will eventually cause problems.
So a group meditation like transmission meditation is ideal for not only meditating but also transmitting that energy. But we don't send the energy out. The masters do that for
us. Yes, it is a service meditation.
A degree of sacrifice, because you're letting the masters use your equipment.
You're a vehicle.
Your gear, your vehicle.
Physical vehicle.
To transmit the energy, and you're not controlling it.
And the reason why they use us, John, is because that energy needs to be stepped down.
Yeah,
That's right.
It's a really interesting process.
It is, really, because the energy that they put out is so high voltage.
Yeah.
And we're more like consumer voltage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they can transmit that energy out to consumers.
Otherwise, they're sending the energy down directly. It would just bounce off humanity, wouldn't it?
Well, that's right. 11,000 volts or whatever they send down the main lines would burn up any domestic appliance.
Yeah.
we'd all be fried.
The other thing that I like about it is you don't sit in transmission meditation and go, my Auntie Mary's got really bad lumbago at the moment. I'll send her some energy.
No, you don't.
You don't do that.
No, that's right.
There's this complete detachment. Mm. I will allow myself to be used to push energy out into humanity, but I won't dictate where it goes.
Now, I've got something really important to add, because it's so topical, and it's a piece of advice from Benjamin Krem from his book, Transmission Meditation.
Stand by, listeners.
He's got a piece of advice regarding war. Do not send energy, he says. The hierarchy aim at withdrawing energy from the war zone, thus reducing the destructive action. He says sending energy could be entirely wrong.
I see. That's where I think we make the mistake, and I think our technology's driven us to this point. We think poking more energy at something will always improve it. Mm. But actually, the master's view is actually withdrawing energy in an orchestral way almost. I kind of get this vision of Maitreya and his mate standing around in Shambhala looking out over the world with this conductor mindset, you know, adding energy, withdrawing energy, balancing energy.
Redirecting it.
Mm. And it's so high above our pay grade that we've got no idea. Mm. My car's not running well. I think I'll give it some gas. You know, probably the worst thing you can do. But there's this orchestral, you know, the seven rays, Nigel, this orchestral manoeuvre, this rainbow of energy coming and going in the planet. Maitreya standing on the top of the heap, orchestrating yes. how that...
That's his responsibility, isn't it?
That's his responsibility, orchestrating how that lands.
Time's just about up. We'll be back in just a tick, and John and Peter will tell us what they're covering in the next podcast of Emergence News.
This is Emergence News on Plains Media, broadcasting on 96.9 FM, streaming live and available as a podcast on plains.org.nz. For more information, go to shareinternational.org.
Welcome back to Emergence News, and just before we go, let's have a look at what we're covering on the program next time. John?
I will be revisiting harmlessness, according to Benjamin Krem and from his book, The Art of Living, Living Within the Laws of Life.
And Peter?
Yes, I'll be doing a master's message, among other things, the end of the barbarian age.
Ooh, we're in the barbarian age right now.